Good afternoon, everyone. This is the afternoon Portland City Council session for June 12th, 2019. Mayor Wheeler had another obligation, so I, as the presiding officer, or the president of the council, will preside today. Carla, can you please call the roll?
Fish?
Here.
Hardesty? Fritz?
Here.
Wheeler? Udaly?
Here. Thank you. Before we begin, will our city attorney please read the rules of decorum?
Yes. Welcome to the Portland City Council. The City Council represents all Portlanders and meets to do the city's business. The presiding officer preserves order and decorum during council meetings so that everyone can feel welcome, comfortable, respected, and safe. To participate in council meetings, you may sign up in advance with the council clerk's office for communications to briefly speak about any subject. You may also sign up for public testimony on resolutions or first readings of ordinances. Your testimony should address the matter being considered at the time. If it does not, you may be ruled out of order. When testifying, please state your name for the record. Your address is not necessary. Please disclose if you're a lobbyist. If you are representing an organization, please identify it. The presiding officer determines the length of testimony. Individuals generally have 3 minutes to testify unless otherwise stated. When you have 30 seconds left, a yellow light goes on. When your time is done, a red light goes on. If you are in the audience and would like to show your support for something that is said, please feel free to do a thumbs up. If you want to express that you do not support something, please feel free to do a thumbs down. Please remain seated in council chambers unless entering or exiting. If you are filming the proceedings, please do not use bright lights or disrupt the meeting. Disruptive conduct, such as shouting or interrupting testimony or council deliberations, will not be allowed. If there are disruptions, a warning will be given that further disruption may result in the person being ejected for the remainder of the meeting. After being ejected, a person who fails to leave the meeting is subject to arrest for trespass. Thank you for helping your fellow Portlanders feel welcome, comfortable, respected, and safe.
Thank you. Today we have three items coming from PBOT that each address transportation safety in a different way and are integral to our overall Vision Zero commitment. We're referring to today's session as PBOT Safety Day. So catchy. Thanks, guys. Carla, can you please read the first item?
Yes, 575, accept Vision Zero annual report and 2-year strategy and direct rapid response actions.
Welcome, everyone. Matt, is this the time for my introductory remarks? All right. Oh, hooray.
Hi, my apologies.
No problem. You missed the rules of decorum, so I hope you remember them.
Well, you know, I'm always one for rules.
All right. 2019 has been a particularly tragic year for traffic safety in Portland. 22 people, parents, children, siblings, grandparents, aunts and uncles, have died in traffic crashes to date. Portlanders deserve a transportation system that gets everyone home safely at the end of every day. To that end, I'm bringing forward these three items this afternoon that reaffirm our Vision Zero commitment and show real actions that will get us there. The first is an update of the Vision Zero plan and 2-year strategy that takes a hard look at what is working to make streets safer and where we need to refocus and recommit. Second is an important intergovernmental agreement with the Oregon Department of Transportation that will transfer over $6.7 million in federal transportation funds to the city in order to improve signals and crossings throughout Portland. And finally, we're asking Council to authorize a request for proposals to enter a new contract for our automated camera enforcement program. We know these cameras have a tangible impact on the speed motorists travel and make our streets safer. It's a program that is revenue neutral, it pays for itself through motorist fines, but does not generate additional revenue. In fact, we'd love to train motorists to put this program out of business. So with that introduction, we have Director Chris Orner and Active Transportation and Safety Manager Catherine Carlo?
Ciarlo.
Oh my gosh. I should revoke my Italian card. It's been a long day. We'll hear from some invited guests on the Vision Zero strategy, take testimony, and vote on the resolution. We'll follow that with quick presentations on our two other items and public testimony. So, Director Warner, welcome back.
Thank you, Commissioner. Commissioners, Chris Warner, Director of the Portland Bureau of Transportation.
Thank you for having us here today to talk about Vision Zero, the progress we've made, the challenges we have, and the next steps as we move forward. As you know, Vision Zero is Portland's commitment to eliminate fatalities and serious injuries on city streets. City Council made this commitment in 2015, and it continues to guide PBOT's work. The backdrop of today's conversation is that deadly and serious injury crashes continue on Portland streets. 2.5 years into the implementation of the Vision Zero Action Plan, it's easy to be impatient with the slow progress. I know that I am. And yet, I remember that the work requires transforming a system that has been in place for decades. In the 1950s and 60s, we built a transportation system aimed at moving cars quickly and efficiently. Today, we know that the greatest predictor of traffic deaths is vehicle miles traveled. Moving forward, a transportation system requires transforming Portland streets and our culture. Today, we will share with you the successes of Vision Zero, what we've learned from the past 2 years, and how that's informed what we'll be doing for the next 2 years. As we are developing this report, we really asked ourselves a couple of questions. First, what has worked? Second, what trends are we seeing? And third, what should we focus the limited city resources we have to make the greatest impact moving forward? This report itself looks to answer those questions. And the resolution in front of you commits PBOT to set aside to a set of priorities intended to accelerate the pace of safety improvements and address the deadly trends we are seeing in Portland streets. Next slide. I begin each of the PBOT Budget Advisory Committee meetings by listing the names and ages of people that have died in traffic crashes on Portland streets. It's a powerful reminder of how personal this work is for all of us. In 2018, 34 people died at traffic crashes on our streets. This graphic shows the names and the crash locations. While this represents a 25% decrease in traffic fatalities over the previous year, 1 year is not a trend, and 34 deaths are 34 too many. So far in 2019, we are on track to outpace last year. We sincerely hope that doesn't happen. But we are here today because we recognize that reversing this trend takes aggressive action. Our crash data shows that in Portland, pedestrians are overrepresented in deadly crashes. This graph shows traffic deaths through June 12th for each of the past 5 years. The dark black bar shows pedestrian fatalities. Of the 22 people who have died in traffic crashes in 2018, 10 of those people were walking. As you know, City Council committed to Vision Zero in 2015, and the Vision Zero Action Plan was adopted in 2016. The action plan sets out 32 actions aimed at eliminating deadly and serious injuries on Portland streets. PBOT continues to track those actions, reported the council last year, and we will post our progress every year. This year, we've really taken a hard look at the local trends and national best practices. We've refocused our work for the coming 2 years based on what we've learned. Before we talk about the priorities moving forward, I want to share some examples of the work that we have done. Example one, truck side guards and other safety equipment. Side guards protect pedestrians and bicyclists from getting swept under large trucks. In 2018, Council approved installation of truck side guards on city fleet vehicles. Thank you so much for the funding to do that. In 2019, PBOT, Fleet, Water, and Parks will complete the retrofit of over 100 eligible heavy trucks with those side guards. In 2020, we will advance a requirement for all city-owned and city-contracted trucks to have safety measures in place, including side guards, mirrors, cameras, and driver training. Example two is a citywide education focus on speed. Speed is a factor in over half of all deadly crashes, so ending traffic fatalities means changing culture as well as improving streets. In 2018, we launched the Struck campaign, focused on speed and the impact that serious crashes have on people's lives. And thank you, Council, again, for funding the one-time funding for that program. About half of Portlanders have seen the Struck campaign, and more than 56% of those that viewed it say it changed their driving behavior. This summer, we will leverage Struck with neighborhood-based speed events. Our other successful speed campaign is the 20 is Plenty. With distribution of more than 7,000 yard signs, we brought attention to Portland's new 20, 20-mile-per-hour residential speed. And PBOT did over 4 print runs for these signs with a huge public demand, and we probably could have kept going because of the demand. The third example, which is really important, is lowering speed limits citywide. Lowering posted speeds is really part of changing the culture around speeding. Speed limits set the expectation of how fast it is appropriate to drive. And in a multimodal urban environment with people walking, bicycling, and taking transit, slower speeds means safer streets. Slower speeds reduce the number and the severity of crashes. On this map, the gray lines represent the local streets that were reduced from 25 to 20 mile an hour over the last year. That represents over 70% of Portland streets. And the orange lines represent 59 speed reduction requests on 76 miles of streets that were granted by the state in 2017 and 2018. And these are the non-residential streets. So we did make a great number of improvements on speed. And the fourth example I have is transforming streets on the high crash network. In the last 2 years, 65% of Portland's traffic deaths occurred on just 8% of Portland streets, what we call the high crash network. Many of these wide, fast streets need transformative changes that only major corridor projects can provide. PBOT is moving these projects forward as aggressively as we can. A couple of examples. This morning, we cut the ribbon on Southeast Foster Transportation Streetscape Project. Foster has consistently been on our top 20 list of most dangerous streets for walking and bicycling. We expect this project to reduce crashes on Foster by 20 to 50%. It includes 6 enhanced pedestrian crossings, wider sidewalks, buffered bike lanes, 190 trees, better lighting, and a reduced speed limit. Thank you, Commissioner Udaly, for coming and joining us at the celebration this morning.
I had a quesadilla afterwards.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was at the Mercado.
It was a wonderful event. Another example is the Northeast Halsey-Weidler Streetscape Project east of 205. This project is nearly complete. It will transform the East Portland Business District, making it safer to reach businesses by walking, bike, transit, and car. Halsey is among the city's top is on the top list for most dangerous streets in Portland. This project will add 3 pedestrian crossings, add protected bike lanes, improve transit access and speed operations, repave the street, and also add 2 new signals. Projects like Foster and Halsey-Weidler reflect Portland's Vision Zero commitment to prioritize investments in low-income community and communities of color. As this slide shows, 62% of the $110 million in safety improvements on the high crash network in 2017 through 2019 were made in these communities. I think we want to note the one exception in 2019. Only 49% of that is in communities of color, because $22 million of that was funding for the Southwest Capitol Highway. So that was a big chunk of that. But we do expect after the next year that we'll go back to around 60%. That will be back in low-income communities of color. So that's kind of an overview. I'd like to turn it over to Catherine to kind of go through kind of the action items as we move forward. But first off, I just really want to thank you, because this has been kind of a labor of love for us in terms of trying to figure out ways to really make our streets safer. And your commitment has just been just outstanding for us. So thank you so much.
Great. Thank you, Chris. So Chris talked to you about some of the work we've been doing since the inception of Vision Zero. I want to talk to you a little bit about the strategy that we've laid out in this document, which was included in your packet. We, as he mentioned, have been reporting annually on those 32 action items. But this year, we wanted to take a different approach. 2.5 years in, we are looking at what other cities have done successfully. We're looking at trends we're seeing in our own city, and we're looking at best practices and the kinds of things that we know can really make a difference based on our experience. So we'll be talking to you about that, but I want to go just back for a second to the large projects that Chris was talking about. As you all know, they take a long time, they're complicated, and they need a lot of conversation with community about what and whether and when to make those improvements. And as we work through that process, we remain quite committed to it, because those are where we're going to see the biggest gains in ending fatalities. We also have identified a number of strategic system improvements based on what we call a safe system approach. And, you know, I think if Vision Zero is the performance measure, then safe systems is the approach that will get us there. And the slide you have in front of you outlines the main safe systems principles. Essentially, the starting point is that no human being should be killed in or seriously injured in a crash. That is a real departure from our cultural acceptance of traffic deaths as inevitable. The safe systems that underlies Vision Zero says that safety is the responsibility of the user of the system, but it is also the responsibility of the owner of the system and the manager of the system and the designer of the system.
Commissioner Hardesty?
Thank you, Madam Chairwoman. I was just going to say that. I mean, if I look at this, the implication is that somehow it's the people's fault.
Exactly.
They're not acting right, and if they acted right, the streets would be safer.
If anything, thank you for the question and clarification. If anything, the safe systems approach says it is not the user's responsibility because all people make mistakes. That is an assumption as we go into anything we do in life, but certainly moving around on the transportation system. We're all going to make mistakes, and a safe system designs things and manages things and educates people in a way that assumes those mistakes will be made and looks to protect against them. And then there's a multidisciplinary approach looking at education, regulation, and street design, and it's intended to be proactive, not just responding to particular conditions or events. So as we have looked at the factors I described to create this strategy, we zeroed in on a few priorities, and you'll see that the report is organized around those priorities. The first one is protecting pedestrians. Director Warner talked about the trends that we see in Portland. We are an inordinately dangerous community for pedestrians, and we've developed some very specific strategies to address that I will talk about later. The second is reducing speeds citywide. Again, the research nationally and internationally shows us very clearly that reducing speeds is a major factor in reducing all crashes, including serious injury and deadly crashes, and that reducing those speeds, if crashes happen, if those mistakes happen, makes them less severe and in many cases keeps them from happening. We will continue to deliver those high crash network projects, and we will also deliver what we're calling our targeted rapid response safety fixes. And we will work and continue to be as innovative as we can to create a culture of shared responsibility around traffic safety. And just again, to be clear, Commissioner Hardesty, that culture of safety isn't about assigning blame to people who are injured by the system, but really to create a culture in this city of moving more slowly, of looking out for vulnerable people in the roadway, and of making decisions that result in a safe system.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
I have a question about, I have noticed that there are a lot of individuals, human beings, who move through streets and sidewalks, never actually looking up. They are on some electronic device that apparently is more important than whether or not they survive crossing a street. To me, that's a huge, I have noticed that as a huge issue. Is there any national data or local data on, I know we're not talking about blame, but I do think that, if as you say, shared responsibility, I mean, I think we should have expectation that people actually look where they're going when they're about to cross the street and not be on their electronic device. Is there national data or local data on that?
Yeah, thank you for the question. There's a couple of ways to approach that question. When we did the Vision Zero Action Plan and looked at the 10 years of data preceding that time, distracted driving or distracted walking was not called out at that time as a specific factor. The factors that we saw were speed, impairment, and dangerous behaviors. Those were what were recorded in the crash data. Probably every time we talk publicly now about deadly crashes, the issue of impairment comes up and the issue of distraction comes up. And that is something that, with the new state law that passed in Oregon a couple years ago about distraction, data collection is beginning now, but that just wasn't, it's not something we have great data on because it's not something that historically was quite as evident to us. That said, I think that goes straight to that creating a culture of shared responsibility point, which is we all need to drive, walk, and bicycle, not distracted. And it again reinforces the importance of bringing speeds down, because if people are making that mistake of walking around distracted, which we don't want them to do, but we also don't want them to get killed doing it. So I think it informs all of that. Yes.
I mean, this is a chronic problem. We see people doing it all the time, and it's part of education for sure. But the reality with our crashes, pedestrian-involved crashes, is that the majority of those pedestrians are obeying the law and not doing anything wrong and still being hit and killed.
Yes, thank you. That is actually the perfect segue to this slide, which again points out that half of our fatalities in the past years, the past 5 years actually, have been pedestrians. That of those fatalities, in fact, of all pedestrian crashes, 71% occur at intersections, and nearly half of those happen at signalized intersections when pedestrians are crossing legally.
And we can't assume that remaining 29% is people wandering into the road or crossing at midsection. Sometimes it's cars driving up onto sidewalks or off of over the line and hitting people on the shoulders.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. And even a mid-block crossing in many of our streets in East Portland, the intersections, the signalized intersections, are so far apart that human behavior being what it is and just practicalities being what they are, people often end up crossing either mid-block or at unmarked crossings, which ends up not showing up in these statistics but being a dangerous way to interact with the system.
Excuse me for just a sec. Thank you, Chair Udaly. I don't want to dismiss the fact that, I mean, that there's a shared responsibility when you're on the road, whether you're walking, biking, et cetera, right? And so and the fact that we weren't collecting that data earlier, but now because of a new law, apparently we will be collecting data on distracted walking and bicycle.
Distracted driving.
Right. It's just driving.
Just driving.
I think we need data. We need a full set of data to not just assume that it's one causation for the outcomes that we're getting, because I can just tell you just from personal anecdotal data, right? I'm not doing any kind of data collection, but there are way, way, way too many people, even downtown here, right, that people walk in with their eyes and their electronic stuff as compared to actually paying it, even when the light is, whether it's red or green. I have observed that over and over again, and I've actually yelled at a couple of people because they did that right in front of an automobile that scared me because I was driving. So I hope that as we continue with this process that we will make sure that we're painting a full picture and not a picture based on the outcomes that we're trying to see.
I share your belief that there's a shared responsibility. I see a lot of foolish behavior in pedestrians and cyclists and e-scooter riders and car drivers. We have a very auto-centric culture. We tend to blame the victims in these crashes when, in fact, like the statistics show, they are following all of the laws. So my pushback on responsibility isn't a denial you know, the pedestrians or cyclists need to follow traffic laws and need to take responsibility. It's kind of a false narrative among, I guess, car advocates who don't want to kind of take responsibility for their role, who don't want us to inconvenience them by making our transportation safe, system safer for pedestrians and cyclists. And, you know, despite the fact vehicles have only really been on the road for 120 years, roads have existed for millennia, I think that they should be sole conduits for automobiles. And, yeah, so, Commissioner Fish.
Thank you, Madam President. I have a question about this slide, Catherine, but I also just want to make a comment. You know, I now live and work downtown, and one of the byproducts of that is that I don't have a car and do much less driving, and it is incredibly liberating. Once upon a time, I lived in Northeast Portland and spent a lot of time commuting. It was becoming increasingly stressful because of the traffic and congestion. That has largely been lifted from my life, and not everyone has the opportunity to live and work in the same place, but my vehicle miles traveled that you said directly correlates with some of the bad outcomes here has come down quite a bit, and it's also been, from a personal point of view, it has taken a lot of stress out of my life. I will say, and maybe this is a function of having grown up in some other cities, that despite what I see, and I see a lot of the same stuff, people going on the, people not paying attention, going on the wrong way on bike lane, all kinds of stuff. I also know the law, which is that I can't think of a scenario in which the pedestrian doesn't have the right of way. And one thing that concerns me greatly in my neighborhood of Goose Hollow is that most people driving don't know the law, don't know about pedestrians clearing pedestrian right-of-ways. I mean, they wait till there's like a foot space to make the turn and then play dodgeball with the pedestrian. Well, that's illegal. I operate when I drive on the assumption that just about anything can go wrong, and it's my job to be aware of the environment. And thankfully, I don't do a lot of driving, but when I do, I operate under that assumption, and thank God I haven't had any accidents. I wanted to ask you a question off this slide, though.
Mm-hmm.
71% of all pedestrian crashes occurred at intersections. 20% from left-turning drivers failing to yield. And in the high-crash corridors, those left-turning drivers are often in a dedicated lane with a dedicated light making the turn. And then 49% in low-light conditions. So were you surprised at any of these data points? Was there anything in these numbers that surprised you?
I will say that we were surprised by the number of crashes that occur, the 20% that you pointed out from left-turning drivers. Sometimes those happen with left-turn arrows. Often there aren't left-turn arrows, and what ends up happening is the person creeps up and waits for that gap. And because they're focused on turning left quickly to get through the gap, they don't see the pedestrian there. And I'll talk a little bit later about one of the treatments that we're recommending as part of this resolution and report to address that. That was surprising to us that it's that high.
So I get that example you gave of people in the intersection monitoring the oncoming traffic, looking for a gap, and then all of a sudden being surprised there's a pedestrian right there, you know, feet away. That seems to me to make a lot of sense. I will tell you that even where it is a dedicated lane with a light, what I've noticed, and I spend a lot of time on 82nd Street because it's the sort of hub of a lot of places that my family and I go on a regular basis, people know that if they don't make that left turn and make the light, they've got a long wait. And so what I've noticed is people speeding up, and that once that green goes to yellow, that there's a hell of a lot of activity in that intersection as people are getting through, because you have to wait quite a while for the next left turn.
Oh, when it's red, they're still turning.
And that's an example of a dedicated lane and a light, yeah. But where we're still seeing pedestrians put in harm's way. So
yeah.
Something to think about.
Absolutely. And we'll talk a little bit later about the timing of signals, and what you're describing turns out to be something that there are tools out there to try to retime signals to build in, again, these safe systems protections about that kind of thing. Just one last thing before moving on. I do want to just let you know that every year we do an evaluation of all of the fatal crashes in the city that we have data on. We work with the police. We partner with the police bureau on that. And we don't... Sometimes we see impairment of pedestrians. We don't typically see a lot of distracted pedestrians, at least so far, showing up as crash causes. Not to say that it's not important, and what I've written down here is that we should include in our culture of safety work, educating people about the laws and about distraction. So it's important, but it hasn't showed up in our data as a crash cause. And then just the last thing I wanted to mention was this thing, Commissioner Fish, that you mentioned, which is almost half of our pedestrian crashes occur in low-light conditions. And as many of you know, some of our most dangerous streets are wide streets in East Portland, have lighting only on one side because of the historical ownership by the county. And so one of the things we are working on is to improve lighting in those very dangerous places. So I think we've talked about a lot of this, signal timing, changing signal timing, providing what we call leading pedestrian intervals to get the pedestrians out first and give them more time and make them more visible. Commissioner Fish, you just zeroed right in on this with the protected left turn timing for signals at dangerous intersections and then prioritizing street lighting. So you all have led us exactly to the solutions we have been thinking about and articulating here. The next big category of action is reducing speeds, and again, as Director Warner said, about half of our crashes in Portland have speed as a major factor. I think you've all seen these little dials before, but essentially what they say is if you as a pedestrian are hit by a car traveling 20 miles an hour, you have a 10% chance of losing your life. If you're hit by a car traveling 40 miles an hour, you have an 80% chance of losing your life. So this bringing down of speeds, even on residential streets where we don't see a lot of crashes, but we don't want to see deadly crashes, is really important to the system. The strategy pieces, and I think this is something we have really focused on in the past year and intend to double down on in coming years. It's about setting safe speed limits to help arrange people's expectations appropriately. It's about redesigning streets to encourage safe speeds. And it is about educating our fellow Portlanders. It's not always easy for people to understand why they need to slow down. And one of the things we're seeing from a safe systems perspective that it is that it's partly our responsibility to help people understand the consequences of driving quickly and refocus the goals away from getting people somewhere quickly, as Commissioner Udaly said, and refocus it on getting them there alive, regardless of how they're traveling. And then speed limit enforcement is an important part of our speed strategy as well. So we talked already about transforming major streets. This just gives you a sense for Outer Division of what that transformation could look like. This was a design that's been developed in partnership with a lot of the people and organizations out on Outer Division. And you can really see the change in the way the street feels and the way it functions in terms of safety. We are continuing to double down on those investments, and as Director Warner mentioned, a lot of those investments in the coming 2 years will happen in East Portland. This is just a list of them. We'll be moving forward with these projects, but again, even as we move through the process of delivering them, we are piloting a couple of important kind of quick fix actions. The first one is what we're calling our left turn pilot, and it again speaks to this dynamic we were talking about earlier of people kind of zooming through an intersection or accelerating through an intersection to turn left. What this treatment does is put a little curb bumper type thing in the middle of the roadway so that when you turn left, you can't cut the turn very quickly, and you need to slow down, and it orients you in a way that you can see the pedestrian in the crosswalk. And that's really aimed at those statistics that we were looking at earlier, the pedestrians who are in crashes crossing at crosswalks with signals. We're going to do 40 of those throughout the city this year, and we'll be, we really think of these as community engagement in their own right. We'll be doing a lot of assessment beforehand, looking at behaviors, looking at how people feel about them. We'll look at data afterward that shows what's happening and how these are affecting those behaviors, and we'll be speaking a lot with the people who live and use those streets, to help them understand. And then the second bullet point comes out of direction we got from Commissioner Udaly and Director Warner in April after a particularly deadly, particularly painful, they're all painful actually, deadly crash. It was just one too many after a week of too many painful, deadly crashes. And the direction we have received, which we have incorporated into this report, is that at every deadly crash site, we'll evaluate the factors that led to that. And if it's apparent that we need to make immediate changes and it's feasible to make those changes, we will install temporary traffic and operational improvements that are needed as we evaluate long-term what should happen there. And then the last challenge, which obviously has come up a lot in the discussion already, is this creating a culture of shared responsibility. And I put three main challenges, honestly, here on the slide. One is that to end traffic deaths, we have to refocus from moving quickly to getting there safely. And that is, it's a change management challenge. There's no question about it. And it's an important challenge for us as a Transportation Bureau as well. The other is that speeding is not just accepted in our culture, but it is expected. And helping to illuminate the deadly consequences of that expectation. And then the last is that Portlanders are ever more diverse, and the ways we hear from people and reach people need to continue to evolve, and we need to have more and more broad-based strategies to reach people we have not historically heard from and communicated with. And that is an enormously important part of our Vision Zero work. This is just a picture showing a couple of images. The upper left-hand corner is a reader board after a fatal crash. And the other pictures are pictures of what we call our street teams, which we partner with community-based organizations to educate people on the street about traffic behaviors and traffic safety, or to provide actual training for people who, say, had historically lived in one part of the city where traffic norms required one set of understanding of behaviors, and then have moved to a place like Outer Stark where there's a completely different set of expectations and needs. And we've worked a lot with those organizations and expect to keep doing so. I'm going to turn it back over to Director Warner to talk about the resolution in front of you. Again, we'll be asking you to accept the strategy report. We'll be asking you to approve the resolution. And then we'll have a couple of folks testify, but I just wanted to call out before Director Warner reads the resolution and talks to you about it, the incredible support we have had from the County Health Department, who is here, and also from Families for Safe Streets, who are folks who have just been there at every step along the way to develop and implement this strategy. Thank you.
Thank you, Catherine. I would be remiss if I want to take this opportunity also to thank the staff of PBOT, Catherine and Dana and Clay and Matt, and everyone has just been just doing a great job in terms of, you know, really bringing the strategy to life. You know, Portland, very few cities were Vision Zero cities when we began, and so we've really become a national leader and someone who, and a city that really has embraced this. So thank you, Council, for your help in terms of really moving this forward. So I think what I will just talk about is the resolution. I think Catherine talked a little bit about it, but I just wanted to say there was a directive that I made on April 24th, as she said. And some of the things that we were looking at in terms of kind of the quick solutions that we talked about, one is the leading pedestrian indicators. Intervals, which Catherine talked about, which gives pedestrians a head start on some of those. We will be installing those. That will be our default practice moving forward. The protected left turns, in terms of figuring out ways to make sure that the left turns, and we've talked a lot about that, and then the left turn calming, which is the kind of the object that makes people go around a little bit more. And the other piece that I think is important that we're talking about is to really at each of the crash sites we put up a reader board for 2 weeks to let Portlanders know that there was a fatality at that site. Sometimes what happens is there'll be a fatality and a few hours later everything will be cleaned up and people really don't know what happened. So we really want to kind of raise the focus and kind of raise the awareness of Portlanders and to know that was a dangerous spot, that someone died there, and for them to really reflect on how they're driving. So that's part of the resolution you have forward today, accepting the report. And I think we're here for any questions you have, or we can take the invited testimony, then we can come back. So I think it's up to you, Madam President.
Colleagues,
I'd like
any
to
questions?
Hear from the testimony.
Okay. Then thank you. And I want to invite J.P. Douglas, the Environmental Health Services Director from Multnomah County, up to the table. Welcome. Thanks. Sit wherever you'd like, and please state your name for the record.
Certainly. Good afternoon, Madam Chair, Commissioners. For the record, my name is Dr. J. Douglas. I'm the Environmental Health Services Director for Multnomah County. I work in the Health Department. And I've also been a member of the Vision Zero Task Force since its inception. And I and my staff, Andrea Hamburg is here with me, Brendan Haggerty, have worked with Vision Zero since the beginning as well. I'm here to support BBOT's continuing effort to apply a safe systems, you've heard that in detail, approach to putting safety at the center of the way that we design and manage our transportation system. You know, in the world of public health and creating effective public health strategies, we often talk about making the safe choice the easy choice. Whether it's access to healthy food or other strategies, we know that people will have better outcomes if we build those systems into our world. We know that Vision Zero makes a critical contribution to our effort to improve community health. Just want to point out a couple of reasons why I think we need strategies like Vision Zero to make progress on public health goals. First, these deaths are numerous, so numerous that they contribute as a leading cause of death in Multnomah County. And, of course, secondly, most importantly, they're preventable. They are, and finally, and actually I think most importantly, they disproportionately impact vulnerable members of our community, our communities of color. And during the Vision Zero process, we talked often about communities of concern and ways to think about the ways that people are vulnerable in the context of our transportation system. To my first point, I just want to share some data on the commonness of our traffic deaths. In the five-year period between 2013 and 2017, unintentional injury was the third leading cause of death in the county, ranking just behind heart disease and cancer. And as noted earlier, the high rate of traffic deaths for pedestrians really runs counter to a lot of our efforts that we're trying to advance to get people out of their cars and walking. And if our streets aren't safe for pedestrians, it's very hard to encourage people to get out of their cars and get on their feet. And of course, those strategies are directly related to cardiovascular disease. So traffic deaths themselves are what we want to avoid, but we also know that our traffic system has a very big impact on the choices that people make. We simply can't make progress on the leading causes of death and injury without efforts like Vision Zero. The preventive nature of traffic injuries is the second piece that makes this such an important issue. One of the aspects that of Vision Zero that stands out to me as my role as a public health practitioner is that it's evidence-based. In public health, we look at data, we use data, we rely on data, we look to data to help us understand this. We know that other jurisdictions have blazed the trail for us. They've made effective ways to reduce injuries, and like other public health agencies engaged in this effort across the country and around the world, we know that lowering speeds is one of the most effective strategies that we can look to reduce the likelihood and severity of injuries. There are estimates that we look to that says that a 5% reduction in speed can reduce fatalities by as much as 30%. That's a small investment of change for a very large benefit. And those kind of evidence-based strategies help us to tell the story. They help us to understand how those trades, those transactions that we're making, those decisions that we're making really affect have very big impacts. Traffic deaths, like all other public health issues, really demand that we respond with a look toward the disparities faced by low-income residents and people of color in our community. One of the things that I very much appreciated, as I said, about PBOT's work and the task force's work is how close we've looked at the relationship between our transportation system, the effects of our transportation system, and specifically how we use enforcement tools and how those might disproportionately impact communities in unintended ways. And the two-year plan updated specifically prioritizes objectives that are important to our most vulnerable communities and communities of color. For one example of that is the improved street lighting plan, and that was elevated as a concern in the Walking While Black report. We simply can't reduce the unacceptable and persistent health disparities that we see in our community without efforts like Vision Zero. I really want to thank you and applaud both this elected body and Portland Bureau of Transportation and the Vision Zero Task Force for making progress in this effort. The Multnomah County and Multnomah County Health Department, Environmental Health, we are here to support your work, and we'll be here with you all along the way. Thank you.
Thank you.
Before you go, could I just, something you said earlier really jumped out at me, and that was the statistics you shared with us about the way you collect data on deaths in the county. I think you had cancer number 3. I forget what you had as number 1 and 2.
Heart disease and cancer.
So heart disease is 2, cancer is 3?
Heart disease is number 1, cancer is number 2, traffic injuries, unintended injuries are number 3.
Number 3.
Mm-hmm.
And where is that data for people that want to drill down?
We're relying on CDC data for that. My staff will be happy to help tap that data for you and bring it down in a more granular level.
Thank you.
And an interesting item you brought up for me is the lack of safe pedestrian infrastructure is another kind of it's a public safety issue, but it's also a public health issue, because if people can't walk, they have all sorts of adverse health outcomes. So I think that is important to note, that a side effect of us having a more complete system and system that's safe for all users means we have a healthier community. So that is exciting.
Yes,
thank you. All right.
Thank you so much.
No, sir. Not how it works. Sorry.
I'll be happy to talk with.
Yeah, thank you.
Yes.
Carla, is there any public testimony?
Yes, we have 2 people signed up, Chad Busto and Jillian Detweiler.
Great.
Was your name called, sir?
Chad?
Yeah.
Okay.
Hold on, please.
She called him.
Okay. Welcome. You have 3 minutes to give your testimony. Please state your name for the record, and sure. Either of you can begin.
My name's Chad Busto. So in just paying attention to the testimonies earlier, I thought it was really important, a couple of ideas about actually changing our culture, and the idea that, like, nobody should really be killed in traffic deaths. But I think it might be just as important in a way, because as human beings, we kind of have a history of being on this planet for a while and being subjected to kind of like as many types of death as like are possible. We have sickness, we have accidents, we have things like killing and murder. And I think that it was kind of stated earlier about the subtle psychological identity of the inevitableness of dying on this planet. And I think that that's one of the most troubling psychologies that we have as human beings in general, to the point that if there was anything that we could do as human beings overall on this planet to actually stop ourselves from dying before we died, including traffic deaths, I think that it might be a really good idea to look at, because the basic component of humans on this planet that we find to be everything in our societies, from our laws to our educational systems, is our language. And if we get used to the idea, because of our language, of dying and death in general, it presupposes us to that eventuality. And one of the ideas I guess I wanted to translate here then is the fundamental aspect of humanity and language, that unless we actually change our language from the actual basic level of even so basic as the alphabet itself, I think that we're going to continue to experience traffic deaths in some way, shape, or form. So that's kind of my testimony about the whole idea.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Welcome. Please state your name for the record.
Good afternoon, Commissioners. I'm Jillian Detweiler, Executive Director of the Street Trust. And I was attracted to working at the Street Trust because of the pleasure of walking and biking, using public transportation, as Commissioner Fish said, removing that stress of driving from my life. But as I have done this work, I really have been surprised by how many people feel that their choices are curtailed because of death, fear of death, injury, intimidation, and personal security using our public streets. I also work with Oregon and Southwest Washington Families for Safe Streets. These are folks who have had loved ones killed in crashes and are willing to find meaning in their loss by preventing other people and families from experiencing the tragedy that they endure. It's an honor to elevate their voices. Kim Stone from Families for Safe Streets is here today. And working with Families for Safe Streets makes Vision Zero more personal for the Street Trust. We are so proud that Portland is an early and persistent adopter of Vision Zero, and that it's a prominent guidepost for PBOT and the city. Zero is the only acceptable goal for traffic deaths. The piece that we want to underscore is street design. We have to rebuild our transportation network to give people all the signals and protections that they need for everybody to move around safely. That's why, you know, we're very active in the regional transportation measure and have worked hard to keep safety as one of the criteria for projects that will ultimately be, you know, elevated into a project list to put before the voters. My job is an advocate, so I'm going to suggest some ways we could be a little stronger. When the Street Trust is invited to participate in project design, open houses, or committees, we're looking at it now through the Vision Zero lens. We saw the 122nd project goals evolve a little bit in a positive way. It started with a goal of increased safety for all, improve pedestrian bike access, and support better transit while balancing the needs of freight and other modes. it's that last phrase that makes you feel like, oh yeah, we'll do those things for pedestrians and bikes as long as it doesn't inconvenience cars and trucks. But there's actually been some change in the language on that project, and we would like to continue to encourage just that really clear priority for protecting vulnerable road users.
Jillian, your time is up. I can extend a minute to
okay,
you.
Okay, just
only,
a minute.
We only have two people, and you're okay. An important voice.
Okay,
here.
Thank you. During my time on the Vision Zero Task Force, approaches other than street redesign have been agenda items for the task force, and I think the most sensitive of these has been enforcement. There have been racially diverse people at the Vision Zero table who've helped eliminate the desperate racial impacts of enforcement, and those conversations, I think, have shaped the way that PBOT and the Portland Police Bureau has moved forward. There's at least a place where the data is shared, and there's an opportunity to probe what the data mean. The goal of enforcement is prevention, not citations, and that was discussed earlier. My brief review of the literature says that citations aren't very effective in changing behavior. Someone who's cited is actually twice as likely to be cited again. The research does show that cameras are a deterrent. In New York, automated speed cameras reduced speeding by 63% and pedestrian injuries by 23%. I know there's a lot of sensitivity to where those cameras are located, but I do think they've shown a superior deterrent effect, which is what we really want.
We're going to need to wrap
that's
up.
What I have to share.
Yeah.
Thank you very
Thank
much.
Thank you, Jillian.
Yeah.
So, Madam Chair, are we about to vote on the resolution?
I actually have some questions for staff.
Okay. Let's bring staff back up.
Thank you so much for your work on this. So I just have some fairly detailed questions, which I'm sure will not surprise you in the least. The first one is, it's great that we have Vision Zero today, having had the pedestrian plan yesterday, and we had some discussion in the pedestrian plan about parking near intersections. I'm wondering how quickly are we going to be able to move forward on removing parking spots all over where the parking is designated as a parking spot, but it's actually an illegal parking spot?
Well, in terms of timing, I think we are trying to prioritize where we're doing capital projects because there is a cost involved. And, you know, I think we are open to trying to figure out the best way to do that in terms of our kind of our limited resources, because it isn't free in terms of like having a lot of times we'll have to remove curbs, well, there's paint involved, there's signage. So we really want to prioritize the most dangerous streets, and those will be where our priorities will be.
So I would encourage you, just speaking as one commissioner, to be thinking for next year's budget. We only just voted on, well, we haven't even voted on this year's budget yet. We'll do that next week. But looking forward to next year, I would be very interested in a package to look at the capital costs of doing that parking changes. In the past, over the past 10 years, when we've discussed it, there's been some suggestion that losing the revenue from those spots might have an impact on other programs. So I would encourage you to look at that. And if there is a cost to that, looking at the cost of the lives that we've lost, I would, again, be very happy to consider a funding mechanism.
Commissioner, I support that as well. This is something that's high priority for me, and I think starting with intersections, especially that are don't have proper crosswalks, as Chris mentioned, where we're doing capital projects to save time and money, but...
Thank you, Commissioner. And I should have started by saying thank you for your passion for this project and for the pedestrian plan yesterday, and for certainly taking my interest in this up to the next level and then the next level beyond that. And I really appreciate your attention to all of these issues, which is why I'm asking these questions without having asked them ahead of time, because I know that you've asked them as well. I assume that you have. Do we have demographic data on the crash victims and pedestrians in general?
I can answer this if you'd like.
Yeah. We don't really have demographic data on crash victims, and there's a couple reasons for that. We get our traffic crash data from the state,
And it's essentially calibrated against the DMV records. Those DMV records don't give us racial data. They don't give us other, except age, so we do have age. And we often, when we show graphics, we often use the age because that's a really important indicator of vulnerability. But we don't have a good way to collect race data. And one of the, sometimes it's noted by the officers who respond to crashes. The challenge there is that when you have a severely injured or deceased person, an officer may or may not make the right judgment call on what race this person is. Mm-hmm. So we just don't have reliable sources. We do have sort of state-level aggregated data, but that's the closest we can come. We can't really say reliably X number of crashes happened to people of X race or ethnicity.
And I can tell that you've been thinking about this a lot, just as we yeah. are often concerned about the demographics of people stopped for traffic infractions.
Right.
I think this is important information, and if there's a way to glean from newspaper articles about the people who've been affected, there's often a personal interest story about that that mm-hmm. could then be aggregated without asking for that identification at the time, and it would be, as you say, an estimate, or not necessarily 100% accurate, but I think it would be helpful. It probably would show us who's being impacted, which communities.
There are also GoFundMe pages for mm-hmm. medical expenses and funeral mm-hmm. expenses, and you know, just anecdotally, I do, I believe that the victims are people of color are disproportionately represented in those traffic deaths.
That's. Would be
especially pedestrians.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think the other dynamic at play here is we do know where these crashes happen, and we do have demographic data about the surrounding communities.
Yeah.
And so while we may not have data on each person, though I appreciate your suggestions and our team will think about that.
Yeah.
I think it's a reasonable thing for us to be grappling with. But we know from the demographics of the places where these incidents are concentrated, that communities are impacted
yeah.
by fear of that, by whatever curtailment of their activities, as Jay mentioned, they might experience because of that type of fear.
Right. Thank you. Do we have information about the particular projects that have been funded with the Vision Zero allocation from the cannabis tax money?
We do have that. We, in the conversation about the cannabis tax earlier this year, we prepared a summary of the Vision Zero activities that have been funded by it, and we can make that available to you.
If you could get it probably to all of council, that would
absolutely.
Be really helpful. Do you know, for instance, how much lighting have we installed in East Portland?
Ooh.
I'm really putting you on the spot.
Let me get back to you on that. I don't know exactly. I know generally that the bad news answer is that it is tremendously expensive to install lighting. But more than that, we'll get you actual estimates back. And we will be looking at lighting, as we have talked about in the budget process and in this report, both as part of our major capital projects moving forward, and also we have a couple of individual budget asks for specific lighting on Stark, and thank you for your approval of that, and we'll hopefully be moving that forward as well.
And then my last question is, in the Fix Our Street Bond, and again, I appreciate that the Street Trust being here and advocating consistently for safety as well as movement and maintenance. In the Fix Our Street gas tax, mm-hmm. are Vision Zero projects included in the safety improvements funded by the gas tax?
Many of them are, yes.
So if we could have a list of what has been funded on the safety side with the gas tax, that would be really helpful. Thank you. Mm-hmm.
Commissioner Hardesty.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I am also interested, and I think I heard someone testify that we have been able to reduce speeds because of Vision Zero, and I'm assuming that was because of the speed limit reductions that have taken place in some areas where Vision Zero is being implemented. Would that be an accurate assumption?
So Dana Dickman is going to come up in a few minutes to talk about our next item, and she has some very clear collected data on the automated enforcement cameras and the before and after data collection we've done there. So we have clear answers there. As far as reducing the speed limit, what we see generally, and we see this nationally, and we've also seen this in our own data collection, is reducing the speed limit reduces the top-end speeders by a significant amount, and I can get you the exact percentage, but it's a significant reduction in the people who are going more than 10 miles an hour over the speed limit. So what it ends up meaning is if you bring the speed limit down 10 miles an hour, you really do bring down some of those most dangerous speeding behaviors.
I appreciate that, but in some areas in East Portland, we've actually brought the speed limit down significantly more than 5 or 10 miles an hour. And then you could be going a couple of blocks and all of a sudden it's back up 10 additional miles. And then you turn to the left and then it's down 20 more miles. And then you turn to the right and then it's up another 10 miles. It is very confusing if
yes.
Your goal is to change behavior when every other street has a different speed limit.
So you are highlighting a tricky dynamic for us, which is we don't actually, as a city, have control over speed limits on city streets. We need to ask the State Department of Transportation for permission to reduce speeds. And we have done that. If you remember the map that Chris showed with those gray lines, which were the residential speeds, which we got legislative authority to reduce all residential streets by 5 miles an hour. That's pretty clear, but those the larger streets, the collectors, and to some extent the arterials, we need to ask permission, and we need to make a pretty elaborate case for a particular section of roadway, so we have done it section by section. It's not our preferred method either, and we actually went to the state legislature this past session to ask for the authority to be able to set speeds locally. We weren't successful, but our sponsor is interested in taking the bill back in the short session, and so we will keep working on it.
I said, yeah, it normally takes about 10 years to get something through.
I don't have 10 years.
Neither do I. I'm not going to be around that long. Thank you for that explanation. I mean, my only point is that you can imagine how frustrating it is for people who live in the community who are trying to do the right thing, and yet there's no commonality, consistency from one major area to the next. And I just think that's not a good way to actually change behavior, because you're not changing behavior. You're making people lose their mind because they don't know like how to legally operate on the street that they're operating on. As we talk about cameras today, are we talking about cameras that will actually fine people for speeding over a certain percentage, or are we still talking about the readers, which in my mind have been very effective in actually helping to reduce speed? So when you are asking for permission for an RFP, what specifically are you asking for that permission for?
If it's all right with you, we actually have a separate item on that, and we have the staff member who can answer your questions much more specifically than I can. So if we could hold over on that until that item, you'll get better answers from us.
Very good.
Thank
Madam
you.
President?
Mr. Fish.
I have one question, and I was the beneficiary of an excellent briefing by Chris and Catherine in my office on this two-year action plan and got all my questions answered. But Chris, you said something when we met about calibrating community expectations. And I was struck by something Jillian Detweiler said, where she said that zero was the only acceptable goal. Mm-hmm. Now, I'm going to offer an analogy. When I was the housing commissioner, as a condition of getting federal funds to address homelessness, every city in the country had to adopt what was called a 10-year plan to end homelessness. No one who adopted such a plan expected to end homelessness in 10 years. And the only city that had the nerve to sort of publicize all of the progress it made towards, quote, ending homelessness was Utah, was in Utah, Salt Lake City. And it turned out they ended homelessness by cherry picking one category, ending homelessness but leaving everyone else behind. And once people understood that they had only solved one small problem, but the rest of the problem was getting worse, and today Salt Lake City continues to struggle, people were onto something. So my question is, yes, our only acceptable goal is getting to zero, but even with the progress we're making, some knucklehead is going to pick up their phone and be a distracted driver and hurt someone. Someone's going to go to a bar and drink too much and get in their car and hurt someone. And we can transform the roadway. We can beef up enforcement. We can do all the things you're asking. But my guess is we're still going to lose people to these senseless deaths because of behavior. And so I just want to give you an opportunity to respond to this, because I know the goal is to get to zero. But because I'm always concerned about calibrating public expectations, I'd hate to see a lot of good work be evaluated at some point as to whether you got to zero versus making the kind of systems changes and other things which have been transformative and saved lives along the way.
Yeah, thank you for the question. Certainly, you know, we've talked about Vision Zero and how do you achieve that, and you know, perhaps, you know, we will never do it. I think we look at some of the Scandinavian countries where they've made a lot of progress. I was at a forum probably last month in Cambridge, Massachusetts, where they actually achieved Vision Zero for 1 year. So there is hope. But you're right. There will always be the expectation. There will be what I would call the naysayers that say, see, you can't get to zero. But unless we have that goal, I don't think our job is ever complete. And I don't think that we can stop to try to do what we can to make sure that there are no deaths or serious injuries on our streets. So while I appreciate the fact that we might never get to zero, with the safe systems approach, I think we talked a little bit about we need to figure out a way to make the streets safer, and zero always has to be our goal. So I don't know, Catherine, if you had anything to add. So
I guess I would add two things. The first is that there's an amazing video, and this has been done a number of times in a number of ways, where the interviewer will ask people generally how many fatalities do you think are acceptable in the system? And then they'll struggle, 100, 5, 200. And then they'll ask, well, how many do you think are acceptable in your city? And then they'll wrestle with the number and come up with a range of numbers. And then they'll ask how many are acceptable in your family. And consistently, all those same people who struggled with the numbers will say zero. So, you know, I think framing it that way for people, part of our job is helping people understand that impact, and that is the true partnership of a group like Families with Safe Streets. And then just on a much more functional and transactional level, we are in the PBOT strategic plan looking to set a target of probably a 50%. An interim target. In fact, I'm not going to say what it is because we're still working on it, but understanding that sometimes you need interim targets to show progress when your ultimate goal is so difficult to achieve. So we're somewhere in between those two, thinking about how to manage that tension.
I completely agree with your responses, and I appreciate your honesty. And to have a vision, you got to have a goal.
Right.
And with the vision that you've laid out, we're making clear system changes along the way, and we're going to save lives. But we may not get to zero as quickly as we want, but that doesn't mean that we aren't going to save lives and do a lot of good along the way. And I just think that as with the 10-year plan to end homelessness, sometimes we set ourselves up for those naysayers to say, well, you didn't achieve that goal. Well, yeah, but in the 10-year plan to end homelessness, we transformed our systems in how to address homelessness. We learned a hell of a lot, and we made a hell of a dent. But we didn't end homelessness. But it was never our intent to declare that as a 10-year goal. It was a condition of federal funding. So I appreciate your response, and I fully support your work.
Thank you,
Commissioner,
sir.
I appreciate your remarks, and I share your concern a bit. I know that the term Vision Zero sparks cynicism in some community members, but as Jillian said, no deaths, zero is the only acceptable answer, and so I think we have to look at zero as our aspiration, and zero as, I mean, I think of it as a tether, and every death that happens on our streets, I'm moving, that chain is getting tighter and tighter for me, and it's a reminder, a harsh reminder that our work isn't done, and we have to double down, and we have to try harder. So I hear you, and I definitely get that feedback from community members, but I'm proud to stand behind it.
Thank you.
All right, it looks, any other questions, colleagues? All right, so Carla, please call the roll on item 575.
Fish?
We have a person coming up before we...
No, but we have two more items after
there's
this.
There's three items. Yeah. So this item is the...
Acceptance of the report?
Yes.
Accept the Vision Zero Annual Report and 2-Year Strategy and Direct Rapid Response Actions.
Fish. Well, I was very proud to be on the council in 2016 when we embraced the vision of Vision Zero. As one of two members of council that lost a loved one to a car accident and realizes that that's a loss that stays with you the rest of your life, I wholeheartedly embrace the vision and the sort of focus of this effort. And the way I view it is every life that we save is precious and is a success story. What I really like about this 2-year report is, as the as our friend from Multnomah County said, it's evidence-based. You have clear data. It's, by the way, I think it's a very good report in terms of it's easy to read. I like the way you laid out the information. So if I can read this report and get it, that's progress. So I appreciate it, but it's a really good piece of work, and it lays out, you know, a 2-year update, and you've made some very specific commitments to what you're going to do to address the problems you've identified. So I think it's really a model. It has my full support, not only now, but, you know, at budget time. And again, the way I look at this work and the way I think is I drive the speed limit throughout the city and have people honking at me like I'm some kind of hazard, is that we all have a collective responsibility to slow down, to get off our phones, to not drive while impaired, to look out for kids and other people that are likely to jump in front of the car, and to save lives. And that's what this is about, and that's why I think it's so important. Commissioner Daley, hopefully you're going to take the weekend off, because I think between PED, PDX, the Foster Road opening, this, and a handful of other things you were handling, you've had a full load. But this is a really fine piece of work and deserves the council's support, and I'm proud to support it. Aye.
Thank you.
Hardesty?
I appreciate receiving this report and getting some of my questions answered so far. I continue to share the concern about whether or not we are over-criminalizing one segment of the community and using them as the reason why, rather than the fact that, well, using community members as the reason why people are dying, rather than the poor conditions of our road, the lack of lighting, the lack of sidewalks in many places. I think it all works together, and
I think it's a good vision. I just think it could be a better vision if there was more shared responsibility. And it looks like the responsibility we're putting is primarily on the drivers of automobiles as compared to us taking responsibility for the roads we haven't built, the sidewalks we haven't built, the lightings that we haven't put in. There are reasons why there are a lot more crashes in East Portland. And the primary reason is because there's been a lack of public investment in East Portland. And so I guess until I know whether or not we are penalizing folks around whether we're still using readers or whether we're actually going to be start giving people tickets and what that process will be, I will vote no.
So this is an emergency ordinance.
It's a resolution.
It's a resolution.
It's an emergency.
It's not.
Oh. This is just a resolution.
It's a resolution.
Okay.
Fritz.
As Commissioner Fish mentioned, when we adopted this in 2015, two of us have lost nuclear family members to crashes. Commissioner Davy has also had that experience, and I admire you being able to do this work with that in your heart. And I'm also very proud of having allocated $1.5 million of ongoing cannabis tax money to this work to fund the improvements. The plan is a great plan, but without the money to do it, there was no money to do it. And we were getting maybe a few hundred thousand here if we were lucky. And now we've got, I think it's $1.6 million ongoing as it's grown to do this important work. And I will be continuing to watch over that precious pot of money that was promised to the voters to make sure that these improvements get done. This is my shared responsibility. This is a $3 flashlight from Fred Meyer, which I keep in my purse. I try to, and it's surprising to me, even where there are streetlights, when I put this on at night, the cars actually stop and let me cross the street and do the things that they're supposed to. And I have to take it from that, that either they're intimidated by my LED light shining in their face, or otherwise they actually were trying not to hit me and are very grateful for having the flashlight. So as Chris mentioned, Director Warner, the lighting is expensive and it takes time to do, as are many of the construction projects. $3. So I'm hoping that you will, maybe we could have another budget ask for, you know, $30,000. We could get a lot of these, hand them out. Every citizen, every community member could get their own little flashlight. And it sounds silly, but actually it does work. And that's the part of the shared responsibility, because when I'm a driver, a transit rider, a pedestrian, I want the city to provide those sidewalks. I want them to be streetlights for multiple reasons. And I also don't want to be the statistic. You mentioned an interim goal for Vision Zero. How about one less than last year, or just less than last year? If we had every year, if we had less than last year, we would get there. My personal goal is less crash, no more in my family. And so that's, I'm a big fan of this project. I agree with Commissioner Fish that this report is very readable. My only suggestion is next year have an appendix for us wonks with all of the data that I can shift through. I promise then I will ask your questions in the hearing rather than peppering you about what's on page 265. Thank you very much, Commissioner.
You daily.
Well, more of an index is not a request we get very often, but please, staff, take note. So, yes, as Commissioner Fritz mentioned, I also lost a family member in a traffic crash. He was actually responsible. He made bad choices during bad weather on a badly engineered road, and he killed himself and two other people. So I take the three pieces of this plan, engineering, education, and enforcement, very seriously, because any one of those things could have prevented those three deaths. And in fact, ODOT did re-engineer that dangerous turn on Farmington Road where my father and two other people died within a year or two of his accident. Commissioner Fritz, I agree I have been racking my brain, how do we make safety gear sexy? There is definitely a problem with visibility, especially in poorly lit areas. You know, one of the challenges, you don't always know you're going to be walking home late at night. Maybe, you know, so you, maybe you don't have a light or you're wearing all black. I will continue to push the principle that car drivers do bear the onus of the responsibility because they're driving a vehicle which can become a deadly weapon. We have to engineer our roads safely. We have to mitigate the impacts of human error. We have to educate the public. We have to do traffic enforcement. But drivers really, really need to take their responsibility seriously. And that means not driving while impaired, not driving while distracted, not speeding, and following all of our other traffic laws. Commissioner Hardesty, I'm very disappointed to hear your concerns with this report. If those are your takeaways, which I think are all virtually unfounded, I don't think that my bureau has done a good enough job briefing you on this program, and so I'm going to encourage continued effort there. Of course, I vote aye. The resolution passes. Carlos?